This is another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack. Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's TJ McCormack.
Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack on the Red Apple Audio Network, another Side of Midnight. I love network radio. This is the best thing in American media. It is a beautiful, elegant system. When you go to stream something, what usually happens? Buffering Now. That's the brand name of most streaming things, Buffering Now. What happens when you and I go to the radio? We go and we turn it on, and it works. It is the most elegant, magnificent distribution system in the history of media. That is why all of these new things, Sirius Radio, Spotify Radio, Pandora Radio, they all call themselves radio. And at the same time, they'll make fun of radio, but they'll all call themselves radio. Because ready? What? What is it? It works. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack. Thank you, TJ. Thank you for the generosity of letting me get to meet your listener. The best time. To me, this is the best time to be on the radio because it's just you and me. In the lobby of the office building, driving the third shift, working in the 18-wheeler, the Uber driver, post office workers, Walmart shelf stockers. It's a whole different world in Walmart. Right now, people wouldn't believe what's going on in Walmart right now. It's just you and me. It is the most magnificent medium ever. You and I are living in a universe that has many layers. And there's the layer that you're looking at right now, that you can see and you can touch and you can feel. But I believe, in my opinion, there's another layer. There's another layer of forces and dynamics that affect us constantly. We don't see, we rarely feel, and we rarely hear. Now, listen to this. Those are among the creepiest sounds ever recorded. Rarely recorded. That voice is thought to have been generated by tweaking the pitch of a Stasi machine. the Stasi spies from 1998. And then later it was replaced with an American female voice that was used by the CIA. Handlers on the Cynthia number station. The number stations. Around the world, throughout history of radio, and even now, there are secret radio stations being transmitted, putting out messages like this. This one continuously broadcasts at 1.25 megahertz, occasionally interrupted by a live voice in a Russian military code. The code is known as Monolith. Now, some listeners insist variations in the buzzing represent a numbers code. Others just say it's a channel marker. But you and I right now, at work, driving, in bed, these signals are going on around us invisibly, silently, continuously. These are number stations. Number stations exist around the world, and no one's really sure where they are, except the people who put them on. These are transmissions that are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and very difficult to determine what they're for, where they're coming from. Over time, the number stations are believed to give out signals and information to spies, people in spy networks, even like Swedes. But while that's a popular theory, I have never believed that. There seem to be more efficient ways to reach spies than to put out a 24-hour signal that anybody with a little luck could pick up, right? But now listen to this. This is the most terrifying sounds you could possibly hear. How do these make you feel? What do you think these signals are? Here's my phone number. You go live. Then you're on the signal. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. These are called numbers stations because all they do, all day and night, around the world, is they put out signals like this. Now, this puts me in great danger because there's always a possibility that people from our government will not be happy with me broadcasting numbers stations. Numbers stations. Again, while there's much speculation about what those are and where they are and who's putting them out, no one seems to know for sure. 800-848-9222. It goes to the layering of our universe. There's the layer that you and I see and hear, and then there's another layer that you can see if you turn on an infrared light, another layer if you can turn on an ultraviolet light, which can hurt us. Something as simple as ultraviolet light is, in fact, dangerous to you and me. It can impact our eyes. It can hurt our eyes. It can hurt the eyes of our pets, but it can also kill our plants. And it's just a light, but it's part of the spectrum, and it can be amplified and turn something from interesting to dangerous. This is the world we live in, with many layers. It is easy to say, well, those are conspiracy theories. Well, what is a conspiracy theory, my friend? What is a conspiracy theory? It is the result of luxury. It is the Jaguar of intellectualism, a conspiracy theory. Do hump whales have conspiracy theories? No, they're spending their whole day going after krill. What about squirrels, the squirrels outside? They have conspiracy theories, or are they just going, where are those nuts that I put away in the spring? Where are they? No. If you're hungry and you're trying to get food, are you working on conspiracy theories? Absolutely not. Conspiracy theories are the highest form of human intellect. They take known facts, known information, and expand them, broaden them, put a layer of creativity on them, make them bigger, and probably lead to the future. Consider this possibility, my friend, my midnight misfit. Consider this possibility that a conspiracy theory is a vision to the future. How many times has something been labeled a conspiracy theory and dismissed as crazy talk, tinfoil hat talk, and then, gee, that turned out to be true. That turned out to be true. The World Trade Center comes down, and it comes down straight down. And then you look and you see puffs on the side of the building coming out. And then over there on Baxter Street, 2 days later, they find a jet engine. Oh, my gosh, it's just sitting on the street. And then they check, the grown-ups check. They go, yeah, but that isn't a jet engine from one of the planes that hit the World Trade Center. Who put the jet engine on Baxter Street on the corner 2 days later? Who did that? Conspiracy theories. Then you find out that the jet engine doesn't belong there. You find out there aren't random jet engines on the corners in New York City. That doesn't just happen. That doesn't come out of the sky from planes that don't match the engine. The man who owns the World Trade Center eats there every day, except that day went to take the kid to the dentist. Wait a minute. Do you believe a billionaire owner of the World Trade Center actually took his kid to the dentist that didn't have people to do it? There wasn't a nanny to do it? I would give anything to get out of taking my kid to the dentist. That would be like way low on the list. How do you feel about this? This is a different layer. And when you and I look at the Epstein files, what are we seeing? Well, here's some facts. Here's some really rich guys who, for some reason, gave him a lot of money. And then some people who seem to be afraid of him and gave him a lot of money. And they all seem to have some connections. And there were hundreds of them. And then they're cannibals. Wait. It goes to the next layer. That's where we are. It's a fine line between conspiracy based on fact and imagination and crazy talk. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling, good evening. For TJ McCormack, this is the Red Apple Audio Network, and you and I are listening to Another Side of Midnight, T.J. McCormack's show. And I'm so glad. Thank you, T.J., for letting me share this time with you, a T.J. McCormack listener. It's a fine line between let's think about different ways to look at this situation, any situation, and crazy talk. And our country is right at that point in looking at the Epstein files, where, okay, we can consider some realities based on the time and space and who's involved. And then we're going to go into crazy talk and not conspiracy theories, but just nuts. And I'll share more about that in just seconds. One of the best examples possible.
Before you begin your road trip, ask yourself, do you really need 5 full suitcases? With the 2026 Kia Sportage X-Pro's class-leading cargo space, you'll have room for what you need. Find out more at your local Kia dealer today. Keep the adventure going. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely and obey all traffic laws. Comparisons based on second row legroom and cargo space behind second row seats in the subcompact SUV class according to Kia segmentation as of October 2025.
are the daycare centers in America in the late 1970s and 80s, where they found that the teachers were performing satanic rituals on five-year-olds. What? How could that possibly have happened? How could it have gotten so crazy that in New Jersey and at the McMartin Daycare Center in Southern California, how is it possible that it went to the point that people were indicted, grand juried, put into jail for 5 years based on, gee, a kid making stuff up, and it was kids making stuff up? 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Before I was a talk show host, I was a suit. I wore wingtip shoes. I had Brooks Brothers suits, white shirts, rep ties. And I had a lot of responsibilities. I actually ran a radio network. I actually ran the ABC radio networks for a couple years. And again, that's where I learned to love this medium. This is the best form of media is network radio. It is the best advertising medium. You're running a business. You are running a business. You want the business to grow. Don't waste your money on network TV. Anything you put into network TV today, all you know is that the audience will diminish by the time it gets on the air. In radio, the audience will be stable or grow by the time it gets on the air. That's pretty much all you need to know about media. You put any money into newspaper, and that will actually have no impact by the time it gets into the newspaper. Those are the changing sands. Then, and I also had a lot to do with what are known as influencers. I'm not bragging. It's nothing to brag about. It's just a radio fact that I had a lot to do with the medium of influencers. And I can tell you about that. I wouldn't trust one number that any influencer or any influencer platform gives you because it is stunningly easy to manipulate. Whereas this, which is measured by Nielsen, a rating company we've all heard of, boy, would this be hard to manipulate. I've got so much to talk to you about tonight. TJ McCormack, thank you very much for letting me be on the Red Apple Audio Network. Another Side of Midnight, Walter M. Sterling.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormack.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's T.J. McCormack.
The Audio Network with Walter M. Sterling sitting in for TJ McCormack. TJ, thank you for letting me talk with your listener. What a great audience. What a great time I'm having. I really appreciate it. Rob, you're on the Red Apple Audio Network. Welcome to the big radio show, Rob.
This is Walter.
Hello. Oh. Rob was a humorist. Alan in Baston, welcome to the Red Apple Radio Network with Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormack. Hello, Alan. Hi.
Hey.
Hello, Alan. Alan? All right. Well, Alan's very busy doing his own show right now. It's no problem. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. These are two guys who had no sexo on Valentine's Day. Oh, Alan, my God, they're telling me you're legit. Good, Alan. Thanks very much for calling the Red Apple Audio Network. Hi, Alan.
Oh, hi, Walter. Great show. Put on a good performance last night.
Aren't you? You're very nice. Thank you.
Yeah. And you have a great voice, too. You have a radio voice. Wow.
Oh,
unbelievable.
Oh, God.
You realize years ago, they only hired guys like you. Today, you get on like Mad Dog and Squeak and Squeal, and they're making $100 million a year. But the thing is, this is what I want to know. 9/11, we lost 343 brave firemen. Even in one of the documentaries, you hear one of the guys from the rescue team say this is a one-way ticket when they told him to go up the staircase. They died. The other thousands of people have died. The people who did it were mostly from Saudi Arabia, terrorists from that country with bin Laden. Why are you protecting them by saying that they didn't do it? What interest do you have in doing this? I know Saudi Arabia pours billions of dollars into America, and people are making a lot of money off them to change the whole narrative to this. And the thing is, that jet engine you were talking about, that came from the plane that hit Building 2.
It didn't match the plane that hit Building 2.
Come on.
I'm telling you, Alan, it didn't hit it. Now, Alan, about the Saudis, I agree with you. There's so much money coming from them to our country. At that time, their relationship with the Bush family, a big oil family, that Bush family, that's a big oil family. No one, people seem to forget that. The fact that the Saudis were rushed out of our country the minute this happened, no one else could get out. All of it's crooked. As my father from Jersey would say, they're all crooks. It doesn't matter which party they're in, they're all crooks. In fact, he believed they had to be all crooks. These are some of the theories that Ray's talk show hosts and the people believe in, Alan. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much for calling the Red Apple Audio Network, the TJ McCormack Radio Show, Another Side of Midnight at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling, let me tell you a World Trade Center story that you haven't heard. It's as close as I can get. But first, I have to mention one thing. He mentioned about the firefighters going up. One of the firefighters who went up in the World Trade Center that morning was Captain Patrick Brown. And Captain Brown was a gentleman I talked to almost on a daily basis. He was one of those firemen that other firemen wanted to be assigned to his house. They wanted to be in his ladder company. He was one of those guys. He was a fireman's fireman, probably been in the fire department 20 years. He was also a real man. Women loved him. He'd walk down the street and women went crazy for him. He was a man's man, handsome fireman. Nothing more powerful in New York City than a handsome firefighter in uniform. Whatever you want, sir. The most beautiful blonde in the city is a New York City firefighter in uniform, good-looking guy. Well, that was Captain Patrick Brown. And he went down there that day because he was assigned to, and he went up in the building. And what he did in the building was well known. He saved women. He identified women who were in distress, and he saved them. At the same time, Jim Paul, an executive at Car Futures, was like, two or three floors above the impact center. I also talked to Jim Paul every day, an executive at Car Futures, a native of Chicago. Jim was like the rush chairman of the fraternity.
That's what Jim was like. Hold on one second. Hold on. I got to tell you a story, but I got to do something else. I know this seems ridiculous. All right.
I have just averted disaster. So Jim Paul was an executive at Car Futures, and he was a like the rush chairman of a frat. Jim was the kind of guy who could get you tickets. If you walked into a restaurant with Jim Paul, the maitre d' would take one look at him, and you'd get the best seat. And then you'd be sitting there for 10, 15 minutes, and you'd say, boy, they're really taking care of you, Jim. How often do you come here? You're like the guy. Oh, this is the first time I've ever been here. What? That guy. He knew how to walk into a room, command presence, command likability. It wasn't respect. People liked him when they met him. Here's the best table, Mr. Paul, an executive at Car Futures. There were a number of books about what the people in the World Trade Center were doing that day, and they identified Jim Paul. Jim was also saving women. He grabbed them, he helped them out, he calmed them, he helped them get down the stairs. Jim Paul saved women. Captain Patrick Brown, New York City Fire Department, saved women. They were both murdered that day by the Saudis, by the people flying those planes. They were murdered that day. I can't stand it when I hear people say, well, they perished at the World Trade Center. I don't want to hear that they perished at the World Trade Center. They were killed at the World Trade Center. I don't want to hear that either. They were murdered. Captain Patrick Brown, Jim Paul, these men were murdered saving women. And that's why I don't want to hear another word out of any woman stereotyping men as any as misogynists or pigs or, you know, they don't listen to us or they don't. No. You see, Jim Paul and Captain Patrick Brown celebrated what men are. I didn't say what creeps are, what little weasels are, you know, guys who need a handler to get a date. But actual men built that building, fly the planes. They are brave. They do the right thing. I just need to mention those names. Jim Paul, Car Futures, saved women at the World Trade Center. Captain Patrick Brown, FDNY, saved women at the World Trade Center. No more talk about men this, men that. No. Men are builders and savers and to be celebrated, and enough. Enough. We've had enough of this crap about, you know, be sensitive, listen to our needs. No, we're so sensitive we'll save your life if it's in distress. That's what we were born to do. That's what we do. Now, let me tell you a little story about the World Trade Center. I'm adjusting many things. But by the way, I just averted disaster. There was something plugged in my studio that I know if I left it on, it would eventually pop the circuit breaker and all would be lost. It's a bad look for a network radio show. I'm Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack. You're listening to Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Network. Good evening. I've got a phone number, and you can go on the Red Apple Audio Network anytime you want at 800-848-9222. It's a live radio show. I'll tell you what you do. You're bored. You're in the 18-wheeler. You're driving across the country on 80, 91. God help you if you're on 91, the luge. And we have to talk about the luge. Something happened to the luge in the U.S. Olympics that I'm scared happened to the luge, that you probably don't know happened to the luge. But let me tell you this story about the World Trade Center. Before I was a talk show host, I was a suit. I wore wingtip shoes. I had a suit, and I sat at a desk. And I was, and I'm just telling you this so I can tell you the story. I'm not bragging. I got other things to brag about, like my three magnificent daughters. How about your daughters? Aren't they magnificent? Isn't that the best thing? Aren't daughters incredible? Well, I'm an executive vice president at NBC. What? Yeah, I used to be an executive vice president at NBC. Not some dumb butt company. It was NBC. And I'm sitting there, and I'm in my first week in the job, and I'm in charge of their FM radio stations, which is frightening as I say it to you now. Again, not bragging. I'm just, really? I was? Yeah, I was. A man comes into my office at NBC, where I'm an executive vice president. And he has on a dark green suit and a white shirt. Now, dark green in New York media is not the right color. But there's a certain group of executives that it was the right color. And those are high level engineers, technicians, high level techs, big guys who are controlling the capital equipment, cameras, transmitters, microphones, real stuff at NBC. He walks in, a gentleman of a certain age and demeanor. I promise you his jacket never got unbuttoned. You know that guy. He sits down across from me at the desk. He puts his card on the table, an embossed card. And it says, Vice President, Transmitters. Vice President, Transmitters. This man was in charge of all of the transmitters at NBC. I'm like, oh, my God. I couldn't even imagine the job existed. Who knew that job existed? He was in charge of all the television station and all the radio station transmitters for NBC. And he looks at me, he says, you need to make a decision this week. And he rolls out a topographical map of Manhattan. And he says, this is where the World Trade Center is going to go. It hadn't finished being built. And this is what you have to decide. You have to decide if your FM station transmitter is going to move from the Empire State Building to the top of the World Trade Center. Now, here's what they want to do. They will buy the transmitter. They will give you 10 years free rent. They want to establish the World Trade Center as a hub for transmitters in Manhattan. You need to decide this. I'm like, what? And I said, well, what is CBS and ABC? What are they all going to do? You can't ask. What do you mean I can't ask? Antitrust. Back in the old days, there were actual laws. And there were antitrust laws. I couldn't ask other radio companies what they were going to do with their transmitters if they were going to move them from the Empire State Building to the World Trade Center. Bonus track, I was new, and I had not hired a local chief engineer yet. I hadn't hired anybody to ask. And I was the last person to ask. He said, I'll be back in 2 days. You got to make a decision. I'll leave the map, he said. I'll leave the map. Well, I finally get a hold of a guy, an engineer in New York City, who I wanted to hire. And I asked him, and he told me a fascinating thing. Thank God. He said, Walter, the top of the Empire State Building and the top of the World Trade Center are almost the same height because of the topography of Manhattan. The topography of Manhattan in Midtown, it's much higher than downtown, much higher. And if you drew a line from the top of the Empire State Building to the top of the World Trade Center, it'd be pretty much the same height. You'd get no height advantage. And in FM as opposed to AM, I won't bore you, height matters. Height matters, honey. Size matters. I was able to say, we're not going to move. But I realized in those 48 hours and that I had to make a decision. What I was deciding would make me okay or hate it to all of my successors. Everybody who came after me would love or hate this decision. And we didn't move. And it turns out there was the likelihood that we would overshoot northern New Jersey and overshoot parts of Queens. There was a likelihood we wouldn't be able to be heard in far north New Jersey, etc., etc. But that was one of the most frightening decisions I've ever had to make. And over time, I'm like, I keep reflecting on that. Really? I had to make that decision all by myself? Oh, my God. And he could have made it very hard for me to make that decision. You know, he being a technical guy, he could have been an engineer. He could have kept talking about widgets and radiation. And he could have told me all sorts of mumbo jumbo to confuse me and force me into the very wrong decision, which did not happen. But Peter's going to happen. Pete, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network, Another Side of Midnight, Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormick. Pete, my gosh, look at this. You're here.
Well, Walter, now I know from NBC who you are. I saw you a couple of times in the hallway.
Oh, my God.
With the radio station, you asked me about the guy that come in to put the water, you know. There was actually two guys, but one guy, see, it was one of those, you know, you didn't intend on doing it, but it was one of them gotcha minutes for me. I actually froze, which I never do when I'm talking on the phone, you know, on the radio show.
Yes, sir.
That gentleman, there were two guys. There was one guy.
Pete, hold on. Excuse me. I don't mean to be rude. I mean to be polite. I want the listener to understand what you and I are about to talk about because it's fascinating. Pete worked at NBC, and at NBC at that time, every day into the radio studios came a nicely uniformed man who filled the water pitchers once or twice a year. Well, I'm sorry, once or twice a day. I had never seen it before. I've never seen it since. A person in charge of filling the water pitchers for the talent. And finally, I got up the guts to say, who is this guy? Well, it turns out it was a buyout for the stagehand union when the stagehand union became unnecessary in radio. They used to do stage shows. They used to do big musicals, comedy shows on the radio, Radio evolved. They stopped doing that. But there was a union there. And, oh, my God, in New York, it was a union. And they needed to eliminate the union. The union said, well, we won't give you any trouble if you retain one or two of our guys. Pete, now tell your story.
Well, there were two guys. Now, one guy's name was Charlie Cognac. And what happened with him was he had a farm upstate. So, you know, he used to do that job. Then there was another gentleman that was actually up in the transmitter at the World Trade Center when the planes hit, and he died that day. He was murdered. Okay, I'm not going to use parish because that bothers me because I was there.
He was murdered.
I was there. He was murdered, and these people, it was a Tuesday. They went to work to do their jobs and thinking about it was a great weather day, thinking about the weekend coming, you know, because it was still warm. It was like summer still. It was like one of those, you know, summers. And that's what I found a bun of someone's hair, and that was closure for that person. That was all what was left. At the World Trade Center, things that you would think would burn, like mass cards or like from a funeral, they survived, and metal things were burnt. I mean, it's not even believable what I witnessed. And to hear people say, oh, it never happened, and conspiracy.
It happened.
I was there. I was there.
Yeah, me too.
I am sick right now, but I'm doing well. I had to have a toe amputated because I burnt my foot.
Pete, we love you, but we can't hear about the toe. But the fact is you were there, and I thank you very much for calling. I was there, too. It was real. 800-848-9222. My name is Walter Sterling for TJ McCormack. An honor to be on the other side of midnight on the Red Apple Audio Network.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist TJ McCormack.
Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's TJ McCormack.
Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack, Another Side of Midnight, Red Apple Audio Network, giant radio stations throughout the country, big 50,000-watt signals. We're not one of those silly little cute FM stations. These are giant radio signals that can cover most of the country. You understand that stations like WGN, KDKA, WABC, the reason they exist is the government said, you know what, we need to have a couple stations with super signals, huge signals, that with just a handful of them, we could reach the entire country. They're called clear channel stations because there's no other station on this frequency, on the frequency. With 27 of them on the air and nothing else on the air, they could reach the entire country. That was the plan. And you and I get to benefit from that, especially on a night like this. This is a great night for AM radio. Fran, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network. Hi, Fran. Hello,
Fran. What's up, brother? How you doing?
Hey, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm in the car. Just got something to eat. I fell asleep early. I couldn't sleep. I love listening. You know, TJ's good, but, you know, you're also good.
Fran, what are you eating?
I had a McDonald's. I'm not a big fast food guy, and I don't like eating late at night, but lately I've been a little depressed, so I'm not married. I'm a bachelor. That's my own decision because I was, you know, a cheater. I loved women. I just couldn't do it. I didn't want to ruin a life, you know, have a wife and just be miserable. So I said, you know what? You're going to be single. All right.
Do you know why most marriages are miserable? Would you like to know?
I would say because they're unhappy.
Well, why are they?
I would like to know.
Why are they unhappy? Now, why do you think they're unhappy?
Because they settled. I think a lot of people settle. You know,
I agree.
Or one is much better than the other. You know, one might be a big money, money person, or much better looking. You know, and it's just there's never the perfect combination. It's very hard.
I think there are two reasons. It's okay. It's our show, Fran. We're working together here. I want to hear what you have to say, but I have to say what I have to say, or else I forget it immediately. Like I forget things immediately. There are two reasons why most marriages fail. You ready? One is I believe that everybody has a marriage clock, that there's a clock inside everybody that says, okay, now I'm ready to get married. If they get married before the clock goes off, it will fail. They weren't ready. Then at some point, and there's no magic age, there are 18-year-olds who really are ready to get married and they stay married their whole life. And there are 50-year-olds who still aren't really ready. If you go getting married before you're really ready, it will fail. If you get married after you're ready, pretty much you can marry anyone and it will work because you're ready. Okay, that's the spiritual part of it, Fran. The other part is very practical, and I see it every day. And you, if you keep an eye on it, ladies and gentlemen, if you keep an eye on what I'm about to say, you will know if a marriage is going to succeed and last. They shop for food with each other. If husband and wife are walking through ShopRite or Kroger's together, that marriage will not last. Listen to them talk. Do we really need this much tomato sauce, Frank? Do we really need it?
We really do.
Do you want two frozen pizzas? Why are we buying two? We don't have the room in the refrigerator. And it goes on and on like that. And those marriages will never last, Fran. That's my speech.
Well, the thing with me is my dad, you know, I have the best dad in the world. But he was, he liked to go out. He was old school, left my mother at home. And I got to see that a lot. He had a couple of restaurants, some businesses, had some money. And I got to see them, and I got to see him argue with her. And, you know, I said, I'm not getting married. I was, not a cheater, but I love women. I was not getting married unless it was 100, unless I could look at no other woman and say, I want that one. I wasn't going to get divorced. I had a couple of friends in my, 20s that got divorced. Mm. And I think it's such a cherished thing. And I would never throw that away. And, it cost me I could have had 50 kids. But I just didn't want to have unhappiness. I believe a family should be happy. And I just, that's it. So I wasn't mature enough. I didn't do it. But anyway, I was getting a double cheeseburger and a French fry, man. They got a nice special. It's $5 because these places are, the prices are crazy. Like, I don't drink soda no more, so I save a ton of money. 7 years I haven't had a soda. I don't even want to go into that, what happened. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Now, listen, do you know retired McDonald's chefs say the only thing to order is the double cheeseburger because it is the only thing they make fresh. It's never frozen. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Oh, it's delicious, man. And listen, I understand. I know everybody, like people say, how could you eat White Castle and all of that? People like what they like, and that's it.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Do we have a minute or so? Because I got to talk about my two neighbors.
Go ahead. I want to hear about your neighbors if you tell me the details. Tell me the details, Fran.
I just hope I don't. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Tell me the details. I don't want to hear about, the neighbors. I want to hear specific annoying things about your neighbors.
No, it's not. It's good, actually. They had 9/11 guys.
And please. Go ahead.
You didn't know. It's all right. But my one neighbor, Peter Gansey, the highest ranking uniformed fireman in New York at the time. Wow. He passed, he was murdered, and in a terrible way, he died. Those sons of bitches killed him. And then my other neighbor, Chris Sullivan, he was just a fireman. I don't know if he was a chief, whatever.
Right.
He was on the job for a while, but this guy was like 6'8", 6'7", 6'8". He was a gentle giant, and I tell you, one of the nicest guys you ever met. You would see him and say, oh, my God, this guy's trouble. But the nicest guy in the world, and I can see him because my Gansey died outside when the 9/11, when the building collapsed, it collapsed on the triage. He was in the triage.
Oh.
Yes, horrible.
A true hero.
Buddy Chris.
A true hero. Fran, I'm really glad you told us about your neighbors. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling the Red Apple Audio Network. These great men and women of the FDNY, they were murdered that day. Don't ever talk about anything other. They did not perish. They did not pass away. They were not killed. They were murdered. I'm Walter M. Sterling. It's 800-848-9222. That's my phone number, 800-848-9222 for TJ McCormick. TJ, thank you for letting me share this time with your listener. Martin, my God, look at you, Martin. You got through. Welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network. Welcome, Martin. Hi.
Hey there, Walter. How are you?
I'm excited because today my 14-year-old on the 14th turned 14.
Okay.
Today was my Samantha's 14th birthday. I am told this is called a golden birthday.
Well, happy birthday, then.
She's a remarkable young lady. If you met her, you'd like her because you're going to be her friend. That is her mission in life. You're going to be her friend.
Be friends. Okay. Well, I want to tell you, I like this technical talk you're doing about radio. I like radio. I've been a radio guy. I got away from AM radio for a long time there. When I was listening to music all the time, I was listening to FM. And then I came back to AM when I was hanging out with my father. And every time I went to the house, he'd have Rush Limbaugh on the radio.
And yet you continue to listen to the radio.
Well, yeah, I was like, it's his house and his radio, you know, right. So it's a little clock radio on the kitchen table. And I started listening to Rush Limbaugh because he was on the radio. So I started listening.
Martin, yeah. what do you do?
I was a garbage man.
You?
So.
And wait, let's talk about that. Yeah. Where were you a garbage man?
Westchester County.
Okay, let's talk about the fact that there's been virtually no pickup of trash in the five boroughs.
Yeah, I didn't work there. No, I know.
That's wait. Listen, Martin, you got to listen to me.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why I asked you where. So you were not involved. You're not responsible. I'm asking you from an outsider's professional perspective as a garbage man, not involved, because I have a theory. Let me know if you like this theory. I believe the garbage has not been picked up in New York City, despite that there's snow, because the garbage men do not like the mayor of New York City. And I believe that all that garbage would be picked up if they were spoken to with respect and perhaps offered some bonuses, such as, hey, we'll give you an extra week off in the summer, or we'll give you a $1,000 bonus.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't. If I was working down there in New York City and this guy, man, Demi, was the mayor, I would feel disrespected that. I mean, he's there. He's elected by these brainwashed morons, these fools that believed all his lies, and that's why he's the mayor.
Yeah. But the garbage isn't picked up. Job number one, by the way, notice that every new mayor in the history of New York City is given the January test of a blizzard. All of them. Remember Bloomberg, a real mayor, he was in Bermuda during the blizzard that hit him in January. Lindsay had the same. They were all hit with a blizzard in January to test them as mayor. And the only one who passed the test was Giuliani. Somehow or another, Giuliani got the trash picked up. And I think it really came down to respect. If I have a crew of, and Martin, does this make sense? If I have a crew of great sanitation workers, of great garbage men who have dedicated their lives to making my city clean, I had better speak to them with respect and with rewards.
Damn good job. I'll tell you, I got a pension and and I was glad to go out there every day and do my job. I was happy doing my job. I found a lot of great stuff, along the road. I still have it here. So I furnished
what's
half
the
my
best,
house with.
I believe you. Martin, real quick, what's the best thing you found?
Best thing I found is my stereo.
Nice, Martin. Thank you very much for calling the Red Apple Audio Network. Thank you, Martin. It's always better when you meet somebody who does something you know nothing about, to get them to share with you And that's why I love doing this show. 800-848-9222. I'm Walter Sterling. I'm going to prove to you within the next hour that the argument that UFOs and other big conspiracies couldn't possibly exist because it's impossible for 50, 100, 200 people to keep a secret. I'm going to prove to you that it's entirely possible for 100 or 200 or 300 people to keep a secret. And you're going to go, oh, my gosh, you're right. You'll be amazed. And then I heard about this new sport. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's not really a sport. The U.S. won the gold medal in the Olympics that nobody cares about. Imagine giving an Olympics and nobody cares about it. But we did. We won a gold medal this week. You know what we won it in? You ready? The double luge. What? Now, you and I know nothing about the luge because you and I know nothing about the luge. Then to find out there are luge, you know what it looks like, right? It's a sled. Guy lies down, can't steer. Believe me, I don't understand that sport, right? I know. Let's make it even more complicated. Now there's a double luge. This is where two, follow along, this is where two guys in tight outfits lie on top of each other on a sled that doesn't appear to have any steering capability, and they go down at 100 miles an hour facing death together. But now they're together. They're now partners in tight, cute uniforms. And we won. And they win these competitions with a tenth of a second. A half a second. It's not like they win with 15 or 20 seconds or 2 minutes. These are tenth of a second deals. The double luge. I have the formal announcement. I'll share it with you coming up in just seconds. When I first heard about it, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a Saturday Night Live bit, right? What do you mean a double luge? Two guys lie on top of each other to face death in cute uniforms, tight uniforms at 150 miles an hour. Where did that come from? Did you come up with that idea? Are you responsible? My number is 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack. Another Side of Midnight, Red Apple Audio Network.
It's Another Side of Midnight, 77 WABC. This is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack. Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's TJ McCormack.
Red Apple Audio Network. Good evening, Walter M. Sterling. Another Side of Midnight for TJ McCormack. TJ, thank you for letting me share this time with your listener. Great audience. 800-848-9222. You get to be the media. When you go on the radio, when you call in and you go on the air, guess what? Now you're the media. Let's just think about that. That's pretty deep. 6 minutes past the hour.
This is breaking news.
You won't believe this.
What an incredible run for Team USA. Mueller and Hawkshaw lead the competition after one run. Let's take a look at the highlights.
You see right there, they actually had some problems getting into the sled. I saw the Potter man's knees pop out. That's just getting relaxed, getting settled in. And boy, did they settle in. Kind of a high line in nine, but handled like pros. You could call these guys rookies, but because they've shown so much poise this season and been such great racers, they don't show up like they're rookies.
They seem as though they're coordinating gay porn. They settled in. The guy on the bottom, did you hear the language she said? I think you need to listen to this again, knowing what it is you're listening to. This is a description of the U.S. gold win for luge. Oh, not the luge that you had to actually believe in a few years ago when you first learned about it and never saw it except at the Olympics. No high school does luge, right? No high school in America does luge. And they certainly aren't going to be doing double luge. What? Yes, there's a sport called double luge. Oh, so it's like two luge next to each other, like tennis doubles. No, no, no. Oh, no, no. Why waste money for another sled? Two men in cute, tight uniforms. Can't even imagine what the underwear situation is like. Two men in two tight, cute uniforms lie on top of each other. And apparently one guy is the bottom, called the bottom. And the other guy is the top. They get on top of each other, lie on each other, and they go down a luge track at 100, 150 miles an hour, risking death. But they'll look good. We won.
Listen to problems her. Getting into the sled. I saw the Potter man's knees pop out. That's just getting Potter relaxed, man. Getting settled in. And boy, did they settle in. Kind of a high line in nine, but handled like pros. You could call these guys rookies, but because they've shown so much poise this season and been such great racers, they don't show up like they're rookies.
I'm speechless. And I'm a professional talk show host. And I'm like, when I saw it, first when I heard about it, I thought it was a joke. And then I saw it, I'm like, this is, first of all, it seems to be the single most dangerous sport imaginable. Secondly, there are enough arguments that you have with your partner or wife or girlfriend or all three of them about who gets to be on the top bunk or the bottom bunk when you're on an expensive cruise, one of those overpriced crews, which serves fresh lobster but has actually been frozen lobster for months. And there's enough argument about who gets the upper bunk or lower bunk, even in your prison cell right now when you're in prison. And I know you didn't do it, but there's a lot of argument in the cell about who's on the top and who's on the bottom. Imagine getting on a sled that's going to go to 100, 150 miles an hour, that I don't think you can steer. I've never seen the steering mechanism for a luge. Is there a steering mechanism for a luge? And now there are two of them, two guys on this thing. If there is a steering mechanism, do they both have control of it? Does one? All right, let's go beyond this. Now they've won, and they're Olympic champions. How does this work in society? Do they go on talk shows together? Do they argue over who gets into the guest chair and who has to stay on the sofa? Is anybody going to say, yes, I'm a fan of double luge? Do they have fans? Is there a fan magazine for double luge? And is there a preference? Or in baseball, a real sport, there are people who love to watch first basemen. They love, or they're experts on the outfield, or experts on hitters. Are there groups of fans who are experts on the guy on the bottom? Are there experts who are fans of the guy on top? Do kids want uniforms like double luge people? 800-848-9222. You go live on the radio. It's the most amazing sport. I believe there are a number of Olympic sports, sports that should be in the Olympics. And you probably have thought, why isn't this in the Olympics? Or why is that? What happened to the twirlers? The twirlers are gone, right? It was finally agreed that the twirling is not a sport. The ribbon twirling. Do you remember that sport? Oh, that was something. I believe that ultimate frisbee should be in the Olympics. It has been pushed for years to be in the Olympics. And it makes perfect sense to me to be in the Olympics frisbee. And I'll tell you why I'm a little prejudiced about ultimate frisbee. Danny, welcome to TJ McCormick's show with Walter M. Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Network. Good evening, Danny. Welcome to the big show.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Appreciate you taking my call. I wondered, I know you just talking about that. I called in about trash haulers, garbage men.
Talk about that. Right, wait. Talk about that. Go ahead.
Well, real quick, I was thought that was fake when I seen a picture of the dual people going down.
The hell? You got to be kidding me, right, Danny? That's insane.
Yeah,
that's
it was
insane.
Like AI or something. Mm. Yeah. Anyways, no. As far as I prefer to call the profession trash haulers, and I'm not talking about management and and all that. I'm talking about the drivers and the laborers,
right?
People that do the work. And I know we call garbage men, or you call yourself a G-man, you know. But there's a pride into it. It gets into your blood, and you do it, and you live it, you love it. I mean, it's the suckiest job ever, because you're hauling off everything that you want to get rid of. Anything people want to get rid of, the nastiest stuff, whether it's medical waste from hospitals, whatever, the nastiest thing ever you want to get rid of from your household, the trash hauler, the garbage man picks it up and hauls it away, and it ain't your problem anymore. And, you know, there's a pride in that. It's nasty work. It's hard work. It's good work. Maybe not paid the best.
Yeah, but Danny,
we get exposed to a lot too. I know a lot of guys that got disease from it too, you know.
All right. Danny, let's talk about the problem. In the city of New York, the trash hasn't been taken away in about 10 days. We're looking at 10-foot high piles of trash in front of public buildings and 10-foot high piles of snow in public buildings, not in front of private buildings. So if you're going to a private school, the trash is gone. If you're going to a Red Apple supermarket or Gristiti's or D'Agostino's, the trash is gone because those are private businesses, had them take it away. But in front of all public buildings, that trash has been there for days. The rats are having a good time. The rats and the feral cats are fighting over the food, Danny. And my opinion is, if you want to get rid of the trash, you need to motivate, incentivize, bonus, and compliment the garbage men. Say, if we get these blocks cleared today, you get a week off in the summer. You get a $1,000 bonus if you clear up most of Queens by the end of the week. There needs to be incentive and compliments.
I agree with you fully, sir, and that's what I was saying. That's kind of what I was getting to is like, you know, it's the nastiest job there is. Well, not the nastiest. There's other nasty work, but it's some pretty nasty work, and it should be respected. And you know, if you disrespect, it's like, fine, you know, deal with your own garbage. Yeah, you don't want to deal with me, then fine, deal with your own trash. Figure it out. That's kind of how it is.
No, right? Thank you very much for the call. Thank you. I totally agree with Danny. At 800-848-9222, Bob, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network with Walter Sterling for T.J. McCormick. Hi.
Thank you, Mr. Sterling. Hey. I just want to say a couple of things. First of all, this guy, Lionel, he is the worst.
Bob, there's just no room for that. Thank you very much for almost being a good caller, but, you know, who cares? Like, you know, if you have a problem with Lionel, call Lionel. He's a big boy. He'll take it. You have a problem with me? You call me, buddy, and then I'll call my friends from Jersey, and we'll settle it the right way. We'll handle it the right way. At the moment, at 16 past the hour on the Red Apple Audio Network, Walter Sterling is trying to figure out the luge. This, to me, has always fascinated me. Like, what? You and I only think about the luge, are aware of the luge when the Olympics come around, the Winter Olympics come around. But this year, we have been thrown a new piece of information we had no preparation for. Before the Olympics this year, the Winter Olympics, have you ever heard of the double luge? I'm not kidding. It's not a joke. Two men in tight uniforms lie on top of each other. One of them is referred to as the man on the bottom. The other is referred to as the top. They get on the luge, which is an incredibly dangerous sport. You're going down an ice trail for 100, 150 miles an hour. And both of you now could get killed instead of just one of you. Let me tell you about Ultimate Frisbee. Ultimate Frisbee should be in the Olympics. Ultimate Frisbee is a highly competitive sport. I'm going to tell you something about myself that I only reveal every 9 months on the radio. It's nothing and I never bring it up at a dinner or in business meetings. Everything had to start somewhere. And you can go check this. The game of Ultimate Frisbee started in Maplewood, New Jersey, by a bunch of kids cutting gym. It was started by a group of kids who went on to be, like, you know, pretty big deals, not me. One of them, the captain, Joel Silver, became the producer of The Matrix, 48 Hours, many movies. Big deal movie producer, Joel Silver. Joel went to like Colgate or one of those colleges one summer, learned about this game, a competitive game of Frisbee, modified it, brought it back to Maplewood, New Jersey, to Columbia High School, and it became Ultimate Frisbee. I was on that team. We wrote a rule book, made stuff up, and here were some of the things about Ultimate Frisbee that we did. It was 100% co-ed. And here's when the game ended. We ended when we retired. There wasn't a jock on the team. Every one of us was a theater nerd, newspaper nerd, some form of nerd, but math nerd, brilliant math kids. I was not one of them. But we invented Ultimate Frisbee at Columbia High School in Maplewood, New Jersey. Go look it up. I was on that team. However, now I go to college. Now, let me emphasize, we did it as a joke. We were all on the newspaper. We needed a sport for the April Fool's edition of the newspaper. Every year we put out an April Fool's edition. We had a sports section. We made up a sport for the April Fool's edition for the sports part, and then we started playing it. And we're like, well, this is okay. And we cut gym and play it. We played it on Friday nights in the bank parking lot, and that's what we did. But to me, the most traumatic part was this. Then I went to college, didn't think about Ultimate Frisbee ever again. I come back from college. Now I'm sitting in my favorite cafe in the West Village called The Bagel. I'm sitting in The Bagel, and three really attractive young women come in, and they start talking about how they were in Central Park playing Frisbee. They were playing Ultimate Frisbee. And now I'm sitting there. You know, I was one of the founders of Ultimate Frisbee. How are you? Yes, I was one of the, yes, I was one of the people who was a founder of Ultimate Frisbee. And I'm looking at these two girls who, and at the time I was like 30, okay? I was like 30. And they were like 18. And they go, oh, you helped invent Ultimate Frisbee? Yes, I did. Have you taught it to your kids? Oh, ruined. Buzzkill. 20 past the hour, 21 past the hour with Walter Sterling for TJ McCormack on the Red Apple.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormack.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's T.J. McCormack.
Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormack. Thank you, T.J., for letting me share this time with your listener. A privilege to be on the Red Apple Audio Network. I want to share just a second about the Red Apple Audio Network and how this came to be and who's in charge of it and what he did. John Catsimatidis, the owner of the Red Apple Audio Network. Chad Lopez, the general manager, president, CEO. I don't know your title, Chad, but I like you. The Red Apple Audio Network. They did something that doesn't happen, and they deserve a lot of credit for this as business people. I'm waiting to see the New York Times article or the Wall Street Journal article about what brilliant, hold on, sorry, about what brilliant business people they are, what a business thing they did. You see, AM radio, I don't know if you got the memo. Did you get this memo at WGN? Did you get this memo, KDKA? AM radio is dead. Doesn't exist. Can't exist. What they did is what almost no other company or person has done, is they took an AM radio signal in New York, in New York City, where there are over 60 competing signals in the metropolitan area. And they took a dead station, which was called WABC. It was about 28th in New York City, below the public, way below the public radio station, which is always an embarrassment. The city-owned radio station, way below that, way below the obscure jazz station out of Newark. You know, the one that plays real jazz. Promotes, yes, we play real jazz. Okay, if you're going to play real jazz, then you know exactly who your four listeners are. You can meet them, take them to breakfast. Every day you could take them to breakfast. That'd be your whole promotion budget. We're going to take the four people who want to hear real jazz and feed them every day. Make sure you're going to get that credit. Well, they took this station and AM stations are dead, can't be turned around, nobody can do it, simulcast it quickly, sign it off. I know great AM radio signals throughout America, like WARM in Scranton, spectacular signal. That's dark now. You know, they didn't want to spend the money to keep that on. And what Catsimatidis did is he said, well, I know what I like, and I like entertaining good local radio, and I like entertaining big hosts. And I'm going to get the biggest names I can, the most interesting people I know, and I'm going to put them on the air, and I'm not going to put them on six-hour shifts. I'm going to put them on reasonable amounts of time to enable them to prepare their shows and the listener to listen to the show, not get tired of hearing somebody for 6 hours. And I'm going to promote it, buy newspaper ads, show up at every street fair, every cultural festival, And just to make sure, I'm going to hire, like, the most legendary disc jockey in the history of New York City, Cousin Bruce Morrow. Puts Cousin Bruce Morrow on Saturday nights. At the dawn of rock and roll, Cousin Bruce Morrow was on WABC on Saturday nights. Did the Saturday night dance party, the Saturday night Cousin Brucey party. Well, now he's still doing that. And there are nights, Tony, there are nights when Bruce Morrow sounds transcendent. It's as good as he's ever been, and it's a different level. It isn't a disc jockey, it's something else, because he communicates from the heart. Bruce Morrow communicates from his heart, and he's on the network, and he's spectacular. And John Catsimatidis takes the station from, like, 30th in the market, and Chad Lopez takes it from, like, 30th in the market, and they make it into the top 10 every month, month after month after the month, sometimes like they're fifth or sixth, and they're always beating the all sports station. And in every industry, their business is considered to be the best of whatever it is, right? And the sports station in American radio is considered to be one of the best there is. And WABC beats them month after month. Well, that's what John Catsimatidis did. He did what's impossible. That's impossible. That can't happen. That doesn't happen. There are a few AM stations that are doing just fine. KDKA at night, WPHT at 10 o'clock at night in Philadelphia, KFBK in Sacramento, dominant radio station run by Bill White. I think I've gone through the whole list. But Catsimatidis did something they didn't even do. He turned it around. They don't get turned around. And I felt I needed to say that because I have suffered in the radio industry my whole life. And rarely do you find anybody who just does the right thing. And Catsimatidis just did the right thing. And Chad Lopez just did the right thing. So it's an honor to be here. Plus the fact that because of his interest in the food industry, I've never been at a radio station that has better food. And that keeps everybody very happy. It's 30 minutes past the hour, 30 minutes past the hour with Walter M. Sterling for DJ McCormack, Another Side of Midnight. And it's our show. You ready? 800-848-9222. I am dazzled and amazed at the fact that we have won a gold medal in the double luge, which is two men in tights lying on top of each other, sledding down an ice. What do they call it? An ice. It's an icy path. It's nothing you want to walk on. You'd step on that, you'd die. 150 miles an hour, but it used to be one person. They'd be in a helmet. They couldn't steer the damn thing, and sometimes they'd win, and they always win by like a half a second, a tenth of a second. That's how tight that sport is, and if something bad happens, they die. Now there are two of these people on there. I believe that the sport that should be in the Olympics is Ultimate Frisbee. Ultimate Frisbee now is a highly competitive sport. It is a major team sport, and it's no longer co-ed. It should be co-ed. It was interspecies when I played it. Excuse me. It is interspecies when I played it. We had dogs. Men, women, and dogs played it. We played it until we got tired. And it was fun. Then I went to college. I came home, and people were playing it on teams. They had uniforms. They had very strict rules. And it was definitely not co-ed anymore. And that I don't understand. Ultimate Frisbee should be in the Olympics. I'm glad they got rid of the streamers. You know, the ribbons, women dancing with ribbons. How is that a sport? Please tell me that's no longer in the Olympics. The reason you and I don't care about these Olympics is because they forgot what ABC knew in the 1980s. ABC made us care about the Olympics. Rune Arledge, the president of ABC Sports, was a genius. There are a couple very eccentric things about Rune Arledge. For example, he was limoed to work, and people who are limoed to work are usually limoed in a Lincoln or a Cadillac. He was not limoed in a Lincoln or a Cadillac. He was limoed in a white Jaguar. But he was Rune Arledge, and nobody argued. But, and this is the part I loved about him. You ready? See if this makes any sense to you. Do you travel for business? I know you. Hey, you travel for business sometimes? The biggest challenge in any hotel room is the air conditioner, isn't it? Getting it cold enough, warm enough, whatever your preference is. The air conditioning is a challenge in any hotel. The better the hotel, the worse the air conditioning. It is a sterling rule. Rune Arledge used to send a window unit air conditioner to the hotel he was going to stay at and have it installed before he arrived in his room. He had to have his own damn window air conditioner installed. That was the president of ABC Sports, but he did something that made us care about those Olympiads, and I'll share that with you in just seconds. But first, let's you and I talk to Harry. Harry, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network. Walter Sterling for TJ McCormick. Hi, Harry.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm an old man. How are you?
I'm an old man, too, and I called because I'm not really a... I'm more of a NFL fan, and that's really all I watch is NFL football, but I got a question about hockey. I was watching hockey last night. I had to go into a bar, and I'm sitting there watching hockey by myself on the big screen, and I'm saying to myself, hey, why is there... I never see any black hockey players. What's going on here, you know?
Harry, thank you for your call. Please notice that Harry was in a bar watching hockey alone. The only way I could watch hockey is if I was in a bar way into the evening. That's the only way I could get interested in hockey. And I've never understood it. There are like three sports I don't understand. I will share a very secret thing about myself that makes me not a real man. I can't watch basketball, and I can't watch football, and I can't watch hockey because my brain has never been able to process the plays play to play to play. It all looks a blur to me. Every single play looks a blur to me. I know there are people who respect it, understand it, can follow every move, but when I watch football, those flags go down, the whistles go off. I'm like, what? What happened? What just happened? And everybody cheers or they're angry. Everybody's always angry or they're not angry. I have no idea why you're angry or not angry. And I don't know why the NFL got really stupid about cheerleaders. I could sort of watch the cheerleaders. That I understood. And then a lot of teams said, well, we can't have that. That's too much fun. And then at the halftime at basketball games, I understand when they have a $10,000 shot, somebody from the audience gets to, you know, stand halfway across the court and throw a ball in, and if they get it in the net, they get $1,000 or $1 million. That I understand. That's it. The best thing for me about the WNBA, besides Chris Martin, is, that's her name, right? Blonde, and the Valkyries, whatever they call that. The best thing for me about WNBA is I can finally see it because it's much slower than the NBA. I can see play to play to play. They play slower, and therefore I get it. I can enjoy it. I watch it. And so I can understand that. But I and Lord knows I can't understand hockey. Those sports are unavailable to me. I don't understand what downs are in football. Again, it's partly because I'm not a real man, but the other reason is that I can't see it. And you'd be stunned at all of the people who've explained downs to me. Well, I could explain downs to you. You'll understand it if I explain it. All right, go and explain it. I don't understand it. Flags go down, people whistle, people get angry, and then they drink more beer. Well, I don't drink. That leaves me out right there. What was I going to tell you about the Ultimate Frisbee? We were going to tell something else about the Ultimate Frisbee. But that's the sport I do understand, Ultimate Frisbee. And the double luge, mystery to me. It'd be great to get one of these double luge guys on the phone, wouldn't it? Are you a bottom or a top? Which do you prefer? That would be my first question. On double luge, Sven, do you prefer bottom or top? Here's what Rune Arledge did that made us care about the Olympics. In the 80s, if you were around then, we cared about the Olympics. And I'll tell you what they did at ABC that they absolutely did not do at the NBA. What Roone would do is he would pick one player from each sport, one, that he thought was attractive, had an amazing backstory, was an interesting character. He'd pick one. And we would see for 3 months or more promos about that person. We learned about their mother, their father, their dead dog when they were in high school, the girlfriend who got run over by a bus. We learned everything about this person. By the time the Olympics started, we were identifying with this one player in each sport. We knew them. And if it was figure skaters, we knew the pairs. We knew the couples. We were able to follow them because he taught us to. Therefore, we didn't have to care about hockey or luge or synchronous swimming. We knew Susan the swimmer. We knew Frank the tennis player. We knew Sven, the skier. We knew them, and therefore, like a relative, we could watch them participate in their sport, and that made it important. That made it interesting. That's what Roone Arledge did. That hasn't happened. Now all we see is, well, you know, you can watch the luge, you can watch tennis, you can watch hockey, you can. I don't. Means nothing. It means nothing. They gave an Olympics, and nobody cared. And my friend, to stage the Olympics, you wouldn't believe the amount of money they spend. The company, like NBC, that is carrying the Olympics, they love it. You work at NBC Universal right now doing the Olympics, you love it, because all you have to do, to any department head, to any budget guy, to any CFO guy, all you have to do is say, I need this for the Olympics, and you'll get it. You want gold-covered microphones? No problem. You want $50,000 mic flags? No problem. You want new laptops for 23 people working for you? Oh, it's for the Olympics. No problem. It is the best scam in the world. Part of the reason companies fight for it is they know their employees will be very, very happy because the floodgates open. Whatever you want, it's the best deal. You couldn't imagine such a good deal. Walter Sterling for TJ McCormack at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Coming up in seconds, I'm going to share with you, there's a myth that people have lived under for years. I'm going to prove to you it's not true. And the myth is this. If you have 50 people, there's no way in hell they can all keep a secret. That is why when they say, well, the government has UFOs, and people say, well, they can't have UFOs. By now, it would be revealed. People wouldn't keep that secret. Oh, yes, they could. And I'll share with you in seconds why I know for a fact any secret can be kept, because I have witnessed an astonishing secret that you have kept for years. Yes, Red Apple Audio Network, Another Side of Midnight, TJ McCormack, Walter M. Sterling at 800-848-9222.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist TJ McCormack.
Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's TJ McCormack.
Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack on the Red Apple Audio Network. Good evening. This is Another Side of Midnight. We get to spend time together. It's live radio. Live radio is the rarest, most remarkable thing and the most effective communication medium ever. And the best thing about this show is you and I get to talk. I do the show because every time I do it, a listener, you, teach me something. I learned something I didn't know, and I find it fascinating. It's the best medium. Have you ever seen anything more pathetic than when a live TV show tries to take phone calls? First of all, the people on the TV, they don't know where to look. Caller, hello, caller, and they're staring at the ceiling. It's not good. No other medium can do this. and it's the most powerful way to communicate, and it's the most fun, right? Absolutely. Robert, welcome to the other side of midnight. Hi. Hi, Robert. How you doing? Welcome to the big show, the big network radio show. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And
glad to hear you.
Thank you.
What about pickleball? I don't know anything about it. And is it a relatively new sport, I understand?
It's a relatively new sport, Robert. It's insanely popular. And you're saying it should be in the Olympics.
I'm not sure. What do you think?
Yes, it is as popular as Ultimate Frisbee. I have some other thoughts, some other ones that should be. And thank you very much for the call, Robert. Other sports that should be in is remembering passwords. Who can remember passwords faster in 60 seconds? You go to your computer. How much of the day is spent trying to remember the password? Forgot password. Click. It goes to an email that the link goes to an email that, oh, gee, you got rid of months ago. Now you can't recover your password. Or it goes to a cell phone that you threw into the river because you hated that phone company and you started a new one. But, oh, gee, that's registered to that cell phone. Remembering passwords should be an Olympic sport. How fast can you get the check engine light to go out? You and I are faced with the almost regular challenge of Service Engine Now lights. How fast can you get them to go out? 60 seconds. Here's the Kia, an international car. Get in the Kia. How fast can you get the check engine light to go out? These are our Olympic sports. Or drain the water from the floor of the basement. How fast can you get the water in the basement to go down the sub pump? When you were a kid, if you lived in a house with a sub pump, was there anything scarier in the house? Was there anything scarier in the house than the sub pump? Over there in the corner, hopefully blocked off, but maybe not, depended on the town. Some towns had restrictions, like if you have a sub pump, it has to be unobstructed. Towns come up with wacky, insane rules. Wacky rules. My father was like, don't even think about getting near that thing. Because he knew I'd throw things in it. Or my brother. I'd throw my brother in it. He knew that would happen. And it never seemed to work. I can't tell you how many times the basement seemed to have 2 or 3 inches of water on the floor. And the sub pump wasn't going on. Or I'd say to my dad, why don't we push all the water to the sub pump? And he would say, it won't work. And he'd come up with a reason why it wouldn't work. It was terrifying. Getting the floor clear of water would be a great Olympic sport. 800-848-9222 with Walter Sterling. We live in a world that has many layers of existence. And things are going on around us all the time that we don't really understand or we really don't know. Infrared light. Suddenly, if you had an infrared light, you would see things you didn't know. They look at the stars with telescopes, and then they look at it with an infrared filter, and whoa, all of us, what's going on there? We didn't know about that. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Right? It's really interesting. But we are dealing with these different layers. And one of the things that I found more and more people talking about is...
Yeah. Todos están pendientes a ti.
All right, now that got into the Super Bowl, right? That was in the Super Bowl. That was Bad Bunny, otherwise known as Bad Music. And but when the Beatles first came out, they were not embraced by most of America. Most Americans over the age of 30, they didn't like the Beatles. Part of the appeal of the Beatles was that adults didn't like them. They didn't like the clothes. They didn't like, are you ready for this? Their incredibly long hair. Yeah, the perception by parents was that that's incredibly long hair. That's just wrong. And they would do performances at stadiums on TV, and teenagers went insane. They went crazy. three reasons why the Beatles became so huge so fast. This sums it up pretty well. Nothing new, but important to remember that this. Yeah, that doesn't have any of the appeal. By the way, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Buffy the Vampire, put up the funniest video where she explained that she auditioned to be one of the Bushes in the Bad Bunny performance at the Super Bowl, but she didn't get the part.
Hi, this is Sarah Michelle, and this is my audition for Super Bowl 60 for the role of the Bush. Now, I see it more as a high fashion type Bush. That's what I would bring to the role. I feel uniquely suited for this. My daughter was Bush number 3 in the school dance recital, and I trained her. I'm Sarah Michelle, and that was my audition.
To be clear, the difference between Bad Bunny and the Beatles, the cultural impact of the Beatles cannot be understood if you didn't have the privilege of witnessing it. I'll explain what happened. I will mansplain it, but it's really simple. Remember that the Beatles arrived shortly after John F. Kennedy was murdered. The population was in mourning, confused, lost, and Kennedy had extraordinary appeal to young people. He used to have young people press conferences. He had press conferences once a month where kids were the only ones there were school children would answer his questions. He was that president. Charming, beautiful, brilliant, funny as hell. And yeah, it was a very, when he did press conferences, he was funny because he loved the press. He liked to do the press conferences. But then he was murdered. Well, now there's a generation that lost their leader. Problem number one. Problem number two was that there was no guidance. And the new person in charge didn't seem to have that sort of appeal. The other thing that happened was that the Beatles were extraordinarily skilled. The rock and roll at that moment, right when the Beatles arrived, rock and roll was in a rut. The music being put out the 6 months before they arrived wasn't that great. Highly repetitive. There was no defining artist. Buddy Holly and all of his buddies were murdered in a plane crash. It wasn't a good time for rock and roll, and it wasn't a good time for the nation. And there were the Beatles offering hope on a platter. They looked different, they sounded different, they acted different. But shortly thereafter, and I'm getting to a point about who they are today, shortly thereafter, there were many groups and many bands who were spectacular, like the Beatles. Skilled musicians, incredible singers, incredible songwriters, an explosion, just a freaking explosion of rock and roll. And then they started to drift away. They'd have a hit or two hits, and then they'd go away. Their cycle would run out. They'd have an album and a hit. And the Beatles kept going. The Beatles kept going for 10 years. They were a cohesive group for 10 years. Highly prolific group, but also incredibly skilled. But now, many musicians have pointed this out, and I want to share this because I believe this strongly. I don't believe the Beatles were a group from Earth. I don't believe the Beatles came from England. I don't believe the Beatles got together, decided that this would be great. I don't believe the Beatles wrote those songs. I believe the Beatles were a gift from the universe. They were from the universe. Their music was and is heaven sent from another plane. The universality of the Beatles, to me, demonstrates that they had access and have access to the world. Their music has access to the world. For years, I would say, you know who's the most powerful person in the world? Paul McCartney is the most powerful person in the world. I'll prove it to you. He could call any world leader and his call would be taken immediately. He could call any chairman, parliamentarian, president, chancellor, dictator. Paul McCartney's on the phone. The Beatle? Yes. He wants to talk to me? Yes. Boom. Sir Paul, what can I do for you today? Any woman would have sex with him. It was a little easier when he wasn't married, but I believe still that any woman would have sex with him. Nobody has ever said he's a complete a-hole. He appears to be liked enough or liked a lot by everybody he's ever worked with. He wrote the most remarkable songs you and I can think of, but they are revered progressively. They're not aging. People aren't saying, well, those are old songs. No. People hear more and more of the transcendency of the Beatles songs. They're more embraced every day. Paul McCartney today at 80 sells out every arena he books, and he books the largest arenas in America and the world. He sells them out. You can't get a seat. They're $1,000 tickets, and they sell out immediately. He extended his tour to like the end of 2026. It's going to keep going. And you go look up those tickets right now. See if you can get one and look at how much they cost. And he's in his 80s and nobody cares. And when he does the concerts, they're incredible. If you have an opportunity to see a McCartney concert, you need to see it. Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormack. And now remember this. Do you know who first introduced the Beatles at Shea Stadium for their first concert in America, their first live concert in America? Do you know who did that? You know who introduced the Beatles at Shea Stadium? That was Cousin Bruce Morrow. It was Bruce Morrow who got on stage at Shea Stadium and introduced the Beatles. The disc jockey who's on the Red Apple Audio Network every Saturday night. I say to my friends, you understand the thing about Bruce Morrow? He played these songs first. What? Yeah, he was the first one to play these songs in America. Name the song, name an artist. I go to Bruce Morrow's house a couple years ago. There's Leslie Gore just eating hors d'oeuvres, just walking around. They're buddies. Neil Sedaka, just walking around. They're buddies. That's who Bruce Morrow is. He introduced them first. It's the simplest way to define. Well, you know, he's an old disc jockey, or what's he doing? No. Play attention. The reason you listen to those songs is because he played them first. Walter Sterling for T.J. McCormack. Good evening. This is Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Network.
It's Another Side of Midnight, 77 WABC. This is Another Side of Midnight with T.J. McCormack. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's T.J. McCormack.
Who do you like? All right, here's T.J. McCormack, Walter M. Sterling. Thank you, T.J., for letting me share this time with your listener. Great audience, great show. The Other Side of Midnight, Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Network. There's nothing harder than starting a radio network, and this is a success. Again, it goes to John Catsimatidis and Chad Lopez, and their determination to say, no, we like AM radio. There's no reason that it isn't successful, except for the fact that it has been not cared for, not petted. And they petted, fed it, promoted it. Son of a gun, it works. Ian, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network. Hello, Ian. Hello, Mr. Ian.
Pleasure.
Welcome to the big show. Thanks for calling. Hi.
What a pleasure.
Thank you.
Tell us more, please, about the invention of Ultimate Frisbee.
You want to know, Ian? Do you really want to know?
I really want to know, and I'll tell you why.
Go ahead.
There was a law of physics discovered that hasn't gotten much press. And it was discovered 30 years ago. Mm. And it's part of thermodynamics.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you're familiar with thermodynamics.
I was an English major. I avoided thermodynamics as much as possible. I hope you respect me anyway, Ian.
Uh-huh. Well, the word, the English word entropy and the English word energy have very specific meanings in the world.
Is this on my, is this going to be on my SAT?
Right? Entropy is the disorder, as energy is to what?
Now, Ian, I need you to bottom line this.
Okay, there's a 30-year-old law.
Yes.
And it's extremely important because it actually is paradigm-shifting for science.
You just said paradigm. I'll keep playing the kazoo. Listen, Ian, tell me exactly what you want to know about the invention of Ultimate Frisbee. Let me answer that for you because you sound like a good guy, okay? What do you want to know?
Yeah. Well, the reason I want to call you and bring up this business about constructal law is that according to the predictions of constructal theory, sports that are more inclusive and easier to pick up,
yes,
as in a co-ed situation, will become the predominant sport globally.
All right. Good question. Thank you very much for calling in. Here's the answer. Ultimate Frisbee was invented by a bunch of nerds at Columbia High School in Maplewood, New Jersey. I was one of the nerds. Journalism kids, drama kids. It was a co-ed sport. Most of the guys on that team, including myself, had had no sexo. There was going to be no serious dating. The only way we were going to get near women was by playing this sport, because they could play it too. It was the way to get thrown out of the sport was if you hit somebody else, shove somebody, push somebody. If there was any physical contact, you were out of the game. That made it safe for women, but it also made it safe for us guy nerds. Secondly, the game ended when we were tired. It's a perfect sport. That made it inclusive right there. Oh, and you've got a dog that wants to play? No problem. And your dad will take us home at the end of it. Your dad will have six people in the car as a big station wagon. Great. It was as inclusive as it could possibly be. Plus, we had crushes on some of the girls. I had a crush on Candy Jones. I had an endless crush on Candy Jones. Blonde. You know, I went to a school where there were Jewish kids, Irish kids, Italian kids, no blondes. There were no blondes in my school. Except one, the Jones sisters. Three blondes from the Midwest. How they got there, we don't know. That's how it started. And we made up the rules as we went along. And we eliminated the things from Ultimate Frisbee that we hated about other sports. You couldn't get hurt. You couldn't shove. None of that. And then if you're tired, then the game was over. That's how it started. Other rules were added when kids started playing it at college and all. And I've seen it played now. And I wouldn't do so well, but I get it. But it started there. And we got, Joel Silver got, a whammo to make a special Frisbee for us. We were such obnoxious, pushy kids that we got a Ultimate Frisbee disc made for us that they still use to this day. 800-848-9222, Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormick. Welcome, Dr. Anthony. Are you a real doctor, or are you like a morning zoo doctor, or are you a podiatrist?
I'm a doctor of education.
Congratulations. What subject is your expertise?
Supervision and administration.
I have a question. I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes.
My daughter, who's 14... is autistic.
Yes.
And she is level one autistic. She is socially outgoing, comfortable socially, an extrovert. You will be her friend. She presents no autistic traits until she's faced with academics. So she's 14, and she's at a third grade level academically. And last year, her school system, which will remain anonymous for her safety, her school system paid for her to go to a special private school for autism, one of the best in the world. And then this year, they refused to pay for it. This year, they refused to pay for it, and they cannot accommodate her. Do you have any advice for me, doctor?
Well, first of all, I don't understand why they refuse to pay for her. That funding should be there as long as the child needs it. And it sounds like she is a very special child. Even though she may not be performing at her age level, I'm sure she has many gifts that other children have or don't have. So even though she is autistic, it doesn't mean that she's learning at a deficient rate. It just means that she's learning differently than other children.
Plus, I want to hear your suggestion. Plus, bonus track, she has apraxia.
Okay, well, again, she has some hindrances. That's going to be with her the rest of her life. But you could teach her techniques that would help her compensate for some of those deficiencies.
Right. And they now they have refused to pay for the second year of the special ed school. That is my hell. Welcome to my hell.
Disgraceful. There shouldn't be no hesitation whatsoever. And at home, she needs an environment that I'm sure she is, an environment that's extremely supportive to her. She needs an environment where reading is fundamental, that you have to be, and I'm sure you are, a reader. All the people around her have to be readers and have to read to her. Auditorily, she has to be able to be stimulated so that she can continue to see the world differently. It doesn't mean that she's not learning. It doesn't mean that she's not special. In some way, she might be even more brighter than the children at her age. It's just that she sees the world differently. So the modalities that she sees has to be fine-tuned.
I have to adopt you. Thank you for what you just said. You're very sweet. You have a big heart, and you know what you're talking about. Now, what would you like to talk about?
I'm sorry, but I don't want to sound like I'm an expert when it comes to music, but I do need you to fine-tune some of your language. First of all, the King, Elvis, is frequently cited by the Guinness World Records and his estate as the best-selling artist, solo artist of all time, with claimed global sales exceeding 1 billion records, while the Beatles lead in certified album sales. Approximately, what is it, about 290 million. The Elvis is 230 million. Elvis dominates in singles and total career longevity. Total market command, he holds the record for the most RIAA certified gold, 101 platinum records, 57, and multi-platinum 25 albums. So, I'm sorry to say, but the King is the King.
You're right. I totally agree. I spent a lot of time with the Elvis estate and the Elvis people. I'm the guy who put the Elvis channel on Sirius Satellite Radio. You are correct. You'll notice when I talked about the Beatles, I didn't hit on sales figures. I talked about the nature of their music having remarkable universal appeal and, in my opinion, did not come from Earth, that it came here as a blessing from the universe that will be part of mankind for all time, as I suspect Elvis will be too. Dr. Anthony, thank you very much for calling the Red Apple Audio Network. Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormack at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Agnes, welcome to the big radio show. Congratulations for getting through. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I should be congratulated. Maybe that should be an Olympic sport. Mm. But I am 82 years old, born in 1943, but I taught school for 52 years, and I taught third and fourth graders, and some children were autistic, and they were great artists. They just fit in when we had an art class, and they made beautiful paintings and art with pencils and whatever, but I was not in a special class for them. But anyway, I just have to tell you that. And the art was, they copied and painted things from their own imaginations, which was just a gift. Anyway, so the other thing I was going to call about was, does anybody remember the on the Steel Pier in Atlantic City? I was 5 years old. We went by bus, and we saw the diving horse, and it the 100-foot diving horse off the steel pier, and everybody waited for tickets to see this. Now, I don't ever hear anybody talking about the things that went on in Atlantic City Steel Pier because I guess no one remembers that. But I remember it. I was 5 years old, and the horse dove with a girl in a bathing suit into 100-foot into the ocean. Does anybody remember? And maybe that should be an Olympic sport.
Oh, I was Agnes. Thank you very much for the call. I was wondering what Agnes was getting to with the steel pier reference, because now I know the jumping off the steel pier, diving horses, should that be an Olympic sport? Thank you very much for the call, Agnes. I'm so happy that the diving horse at Steel Pier no longer exists. Even as a kid, when I saw that, I only saw it once. I thought it was cruel. I still think it was cruel. And, yeah, 800-848-9222. Now I want to share with you something that nobody believes. And it wasn't that long ago. And I'm going to tell you this. And I'd like to know what you were told. If you remember this, I want to know what you were told was the reason. And then I'm going to share with you why I believe that 100, 200, 500 people in government can keep a secret, that a group of people can keep a secret when they say, well, if there were UFOs or if there was, alchemy or Hitler was still alive, nobody could keep that secret. Well, I promise you they could, and I will tell you why in just seconds. But I want to remind you about a dark moment in public school history, maybe the darkest moment that nobody discusses, and the lawsuits haven't been filed, but like, what the hell were they thinking? Are you ready for this? Throughout America, if your school, your public school, had a swimming pool, until about 1980, boys had to swim naked. What? Listen to me. If your school, public school, had a swimming pool, boys throughout America had to swim naked. In the YMCAs throughout America, boys had to swim naked till about 1980. And each school gave an explanation as to why this was. No, the girls did not. No, they were given swimsuits. But the boys had to swim naked. And the reason we were given was interesting. I didn't believe it. But then I really didn't believe it when I found out that every school gave a different explanation as to why boys had to swim naked in the pool in their public schools. Where's that lawsuit? What the hell was this about? You ready to do the therapy on this? You're finally ready to talk about it? 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack on the Red Apple Audio Network.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist TJ McCormack.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's TJ McCormack.
The legendary T.J. McCormack. I'm Walter M. Sterling. T.J. said, listen, talk to these people for me tonight. I need a break. What an honor, what a privilege to share this time with you. Thank you very much. 23 past the hour. Frank, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Network at 800-848-9222. Hello. Hello.
Good morning.
Jimmy. Hi. Frank, sorry. Hi. Hi, Frank.
Good morning. Good morning. You spoke of the universality of the Beatles.
Yes.
I wonder if you could help me with something.
Yes.
There's a gentleman called Bad Bunny.
Yes.
He's the number one artist in China, download, and in the worldwide. I don't understand. I speak Spanish. I speak English. I don't understand a word he says. Can you explain the universality of Bad Bunny?
Yeah. Here's... Yeah. If those words had been translated on a lower third on the screen or had been translated, all those TV stations would have been in trouble with their licenses because he described specific graphic sex acts, which I can't. If I did that right now on the radio, it'd be the last time you ever heard me. The translation would not help. I'm shocked that he was allowed to get away with that, and I'm shocked there wasn't a lot of yelling and screaming about it. Now, what was your question about him specifically? You want me to answer about his appeal? Is that what you asked me?
What I'm saying is this. The language. I speak Spanish, I speak English, and I didn't understand a word he said. Now, people in China don't speak Spanish and English, and they obviously like him. I don't understand the language. You just said he said dirty words. I didn't know that. I speak Spanish because I don't understand what he's saying.
Why do you think, as a Spanish speaker, you didn't understand him? What is it? Is it a dialect problem? What is the problem?
It's like another language. You know, he's almost like extraterrestrial to me. He's like from another planet, this guy. I'm Puerto Rican, and I don't understand the word he says, and yet the kids love him.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. The fact is, Frank, that we're dealing with music, and music is 100% subjective and 100% personal, and there's no way to explain why somebody likes a form of music or likes music or not. That's the fact. The fact is there are dozens of artists that I hate and dozens of artists you like. I can't explain his popularity. I could intellectualize it. You know, he's giving a voice to the Puerto Rican community. He's giving a voice to Latinos. But I thought the voice that he gave and what he showed us was a street in the barrio. At the beginning of that, there's a street in the barrio. Now, what did we see in the street in the barrio? We saw a teenager carrying used tires. And then we saw a nail salon. And we saw him walking by a window and somebody handing him rum on the street, public drinking. And then my favorite one, which nobody refers to, nobody mentions, is we saw a retail counter. And in the retail counter, what did we see? Silver jewelry on red velvet. And a guy behind the counter who looked like it was hot. Looked like he was selling hot jewelry. Isn't that what it looked like? Or don't we remember, or don't we talk about it? I thought it was a disservice, and I'm glad you said it, a disservice to the Puerto Rican community. I didn't think it was a good representation of the Puerto Rican community because, to me, Puerto Rico is a magnificent island. There are many wealthy, successful executive types, retailers, manufacturers in Puerto Rico, and he didn't represent them. And where are the actresses in the televisas? Where are the actresses in the Spanish soap operas? Those are magnificent women. Those are beautiful women. Where were they? Why did he need Lady Gaga? Where were the Hispanic actors and actresses that are on Telemundo and Univision? Where were they? I found it very bizarre. Now, let's talk about this. Believe it or not, until about 1980, throughout America, in public schools, if there was a swimming pool, boys had to swim naked. What the hell was that about? Why hasn't, now, if it was reverse, if the girls had to swim naked, there'd be thousands of lawsuits right now, right? There'd be thousands of lawsuits standing by, ready to go. Not one boy and his family has said, why did my son have to do this? Let's sue this. This was horrendous. Now, what was the explanation I was given at my high school? My high school said that the reason the boys had to swim naked was because of the filtration system of the pools. It couldn't handle all of the fabric from the swimsuits. Well, as I recall, the swimsuits were mostly made out of nylon. There didn't seem to be a lot of fabric issues. I didn't realize that. That wasn't the experience that I had. The girls didn't have to swim naked. They got to wear swimsuits. I'm like, what the hell was this? What were they thinking? Then when I asked around and I talked to other people as an adult, I learned that every public school gave the kid a different explanation as to why he had to swim naked, which leads me to believe that none of it was true, that it was all a big lie. What were they doing? Why was that going on? I hated swimming. It had nothing to do with swimsuit, but it didn't help. I hated swimming. I did whatever I had to do for my mother to convince her to write the nice note on the good stationery to get me out of phys ed that week. If it was a swimming day, please get me out of phys ed. Do whatever you have to do, Mom, to get me out of it. Let me ask you a question, my friend there, Tony. Do I want to talk to that person there? Do I want to talk? I don't. All right, so here's my number, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Did you have this experience at your public school? It's okay, we can talk about this now. It's anonymous, as embarrassing, as stupid as it is. Did you have to swim naked in your school? In swim class, and what were you told? What was the reason at the Y? Were you told this? To me, this is such an astonishing event that has never been discussed again. And then mysteriously, every public school, every YMCA around 1980 stopped requiring kids to swim naked. It was weird. Nobody said anything. Nobody thought it was odd. And we all accepted the explanation, but here's what puzzles me. In every school, the explanation was different. Am I making this up? Is this some fever dream that I had? I don't think so. I don't think so. And I'd love to know what explanation you were given as to why you had to swim naked in public school in the swimming pools. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormick. T.J. McCormick, and this is Another Side of Midnight, big-time radio show. Absolutely amazing that in public schools, boys had to swim naked for swim class. Girls didn't understand that. It mysteriously stopped, and this was true across the country. And then it was mysteriously stopped in the late 1980s, and 1970s, and I never understood it. No explanation given, no lawsuits filed. Boy, today, how would that go? Today, I pushed the wrong button. Today, how would that go? That wouldn't go well. So weird. What else should we talk about tonight? I have too many things. There was something else yes, let me tell you why. Speaking of high schools, now I'm going to tell you the secret. I'm going to tell you the secret as to why I know that the people in charge of the UFOs are able to keep a secret. Would you like to know? I'm going to tell you why I know that the people who have secrets of your company, your community, are perfectly capable of keeping the secrets. They are more than capable of keeping the secrets. Even though the theory is, well, if you have 50 people and you give them a secret, somebody's going to tell. No, not necessarily. They're not necessarily going to tell. You want to know why? I'll tell you. You ready? It's incredible. In your high school, if you were a kid in your high school, if you were a boy in your high school, there was something you knew that you absolutely kept a secret. There was something you knew that your parents didn't know, the teachers didn't know, and 99% of your friends didn't know. You ready? And you're going to be embarrassed because you're going to, oh, Jesus, he's right. Every boy in every public school, every boy in any co-ed school knew where they could peep, where the peephole was to see into the girls' locker room. Every boy knew. They knew where the peephole was to see into the girls' locker room. And they told no one. In fact, when you learned where the peephole was, one guy told you when no one else was looking, and you knew where it was. You didn't announce it to 50 people. It wasn't in the newspaper, the school paper. It wasn't in the PA system. But you didn't tell. You told maybe one friend because it was not a good idea for that to be public knowledge. Am I right, gentlemen? Am I right? Have you ever admitted it to anybody since you've been in high school? Have you ever admitted it to your best friend since you've been in high school? No, you have not. This is the universal secret of young men who go to co-ed high schools. You all know. You knew where the peephole was to see into the girls' locker room. Right? Ah, gotcha. And you never told your spouse. You've never told anybody at work, but you did know. This was the universal secret. And that's how I know that when they say, well, if there were UFOs being kept at Area 51, it would have leaked by now. No. No, this was like the peephole into the girls' locker room. 800-848-9222. This is sort of the highbrow stuff that I know we need to get to. 800-848-9222. But that's how I know that secrets can be kept. Now, let me talk a little bit about the conspiracy theory and about where we're going with the Epstein files. It's amazing. This is like the daycare. This is like the daycare of the late 1970s, early 1980s. In the late 1970s, throughout America, Southern California, New Jersey, there were a number of daycare centers that where there was a report that the children were being physically and sexually abused. One kid at the We Care Daycare Center in Maplewood, New Jersey, one kid told a nurse outside of the school when she applied a rectal thermometer to this kid, said, oh, that's just like what my nursery school teacher does to me at nap time. This RN hears this and immediately does what she should have done, which is to report it to authorities. This followed a fevered interview of every kid who was at this daycare center, every single one of these kids, and interviewed them and then physically examined them for sexual abuse, physically examined them for physical abuse, sexual abuse. Every kind of abuse was tested, right? Hundreds of kids. And as a result, the daycare teacher at this We Care daycare center was thrown in jail for 5 years until all of the evidence was looked at again and realized those kids had been seriously coerced. Those kids had been led to that conclusion. You realize there's a myth that, you know, five-year-olds don't lie. Five-year-olds lie all the time. I remember lying when I was 7, 8, 9. Yeah, I still feel bad about it, but kids lie all the time. They make stuff up all the time. And as a result, this teacher was acquitted. At the McMartin Preschool in Southern California, it turned out to be the longest trial in American history. They tried the owner of the McMartin Preschool. They tried the teacher and the other teacher, and they tried the whole staff. And ultimately, it was dismissed. The case was ultimately dismissed because the evidence was so contradictory. It was gathered in such suspicious and inappropriate and conflict of interest ways that the primary witness who had interviewed the kids was trying to sell a specific course, a specific system for interviewing children. And by saying, yes, this is true, this is true, this is true, she was building up the, quote, credibility of her system that she was trying to sell to school systems across the country as to how to interview kids to see whether or not they have been sexually abused. It was thrown out after. This trial went on for years and years and years. They said that there were satanic rituals, that there were tunnels under the McMartin preschool where the kids were taken out during nap time and taken to other buildings where they saw animals beheaded, forced to drink blood, forced to eat feces. This is the stuff kids make up, and they made it all up, everything. And, of course, none of it was true. There were no tunnels. There was no evidence of satanic rituals. Same thing in New Jersey. We are at that magic point with the Epstein files. A couple of businessmen were coerced into hanging out with girls, probably going to bed with them, having sexo with them, and then being blackmailed. There were people who wanted the information from these rich men. There were people who wanted the information for their software. They had software that was valuable. Valuable to other intelligence organizations in Israel and around the world, blah, 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 right? All right, that's provable. That can sort of work out. We can make that make sense. But now we're right at the point where it's going into McMartin preschool insanity. Now, why were those preschools so vulnerable at that point and we haven't heard about it since? The reason those schools were vulnerable at that moment in time was our society was different. This is long forgotten. In the late 1970s and early 80s, sending your kid to preschool after school was brand new. That was a new thing. Up until that moment, like months earlier, mom was home. Suddenly, mom goes to work. At 3 o'clock, the kid gets out of school. Mom doesn't get home till 6. Who takes care of the kid? Oh, I have to get daycare for the kid or a nanny or a babysitter. Oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? Now moms feel guilty about sending that kid to preschool and daycare and hiring a nanny. And grandma's saying, what are you doing? I was home for you. You need to be home for those kids. Husband's not so sure. There's very little societal support for sending a kid to daycare. It was all brand new. Why do you have to work? You really need to work. That was the environment. And then there was an abuse at the daycare. That abuse tapped into that guilt, that collective guilt of those communities, of those thousands of moms who suddenly were working for the first time in their lives without an infrastructure to live with it. They did not have the emotional infrastructure to live with it. And they dumped all of their guilt onto those preschool teachers. That's how they compensated for, gee, I got to go to work. Walter M. Sterling for TJ McCormack on the Red Apple Audio Network.
All night long, this is Another Side of Midnight with TJ McCormack, 77 WABC. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormack.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios of 77 WABC. Here's T.J. McCormack.
T.J. McCormack, where are you, T.J.? Oh, my gosh. He took the night off. Walter M. Sterling for T.J. McCormack. Welcome to Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Network. We're having the best time. We're having a good time, right? You and I get to talk live on giant radio stations across the country on the Red Apple Audio Network. My phone number is 800-848-9222. We're at the point in time like the McMartin preschool trial, where it went from being, oh, gee, I hope those kids are okay, to being, yes, it happened. They were dragged into tunnels. This is in 1980. They were dragged into tunnels at the McMartin preschool and forced to watch satanic rituals and eat feces. Yes, that's where we are with the Epstein files. Because, yes, I'm sure there were some men who did the wrong thing. They were blackmailed, videotaped. The information that was extorted from them has been useful to spy societies, different companies, countries. Who knows what the hell is going to sort out. But now it's at the point where anybody whose name was close to it, who did nothing but had dinner with Jeffrey Epstein, is guilty. We've got this Casey Wasserman. Casey Wasserman is the president of the Los Angeles Olympic Committee. This summer, when the Olympics come to Los Angeles, this Casey Wasserman guy is the president of the Olympic Committee. Okay. He's also the president, founder, CEO of his talent agency, the Wasserman Talent Agency. And he resigned this week as president of the Wasserman Talent Agency because he was like, had conversations with Jeffrey Epstein. No evidence that he had sexo with underage women. No evidence that they had illicit transactions. He was just hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein or talking to Jeffrey Epstein, or somebody said you should see him or something. But it was guilt by association. Guilt by association. The preschool trials of 1980 were guilt by association. People felt guilty that they sent their kids to daycare. It was at a moment in time when sending your kid to daycare was brand new, no experience for it. Your mother hadn't sent you to daycare. You had not gone to daycare. You felt guilty about sending your kid to something you didn't know about. And your mother and your father were very suspicious about it. Why are you sending your kid to daycare? Your mother stayed home with you while I went to work. Why can't George here go to work and earn enough for you to stay home? That was the moment in time, 1970, 79, 1980, where suburban moms were feeling very guilty about sending their kid to daycare. Well, what did that mean? It meant that when there was the slightest trouble at daycare, it tapped into all of their fears about sending children to daycare, fears which largely have dissipated, both because daycare is heavily regulated, more regulated. Moms know what to ask, how to check those schools, how to know which ones look good, look okay. And again, it doesn't always work out. Again, there are tragic situations where those kids are not cared for. But we as parents are much better at telling whether or not that looks like a good school. I'm going to sit in that classroom for 2 days and make sure that my kid is managed properly, cared for properly. You can tell. But in 1980, you couldn't tell because they had no experience and their parents had no experience. Those moms were pioneers in sending their children to daycare. But the problem was that as pioneers, they had no checks and balances. They didn't know what questions to ask to see if a story about rectal thermometers was true. And as a result, when they heard the slightest glimmer that maybe things weren't safe for their child, boom, explosion. Bring in 20 lawyers, file 50 suits, bring in the district attorney, the prosecutors, whatever we have to do to protect our children. That's what they did. They overread, over-exaggerated, and it was also at a point in time where there was very little experience in interrogating children about trauma. Psychiatrists, child psychologists had very little experience investigating, having conversations with children to determine if the trauma that was expressed really happened and to what extent it really happened. And you're sitting here thinking right now, well, yeah, but we have these situations and we can tell quickly. Well, we can tell quickly now because now there's experience. But then there was no experience. There was no experience in dealing with this. And therefore, everything was extreme. Everything was wrong. Everybody was guilty. And that was the daycare lawsuits in Maplewood, New Jersey, and at the McMartin preschool trial, which resulted in the longest trial in American history to dissipate the guilt of all the mothers who sent their kids there. because one kid said something, maybe, and then it was just a disaster. Believe me, it was a disaster. They actually sent in backhoes to dig up the McMartin preschool grounds to find tunnels that kids had been taken to see satanic rituals, to find satanic altars. That's what happened. Can you imagine that? That's what the Epstein trial is about. That's what the Epstein files is about. All of these, there was a possibility that 20, 30, 40 women were sex trafficked. And therefore, anybody who talked to Jeffrey Epstein participated in sex trafficking, a horrendous crime, a beyond horrendous crime, that 17, 16-year-old girls were coerced and used for sex. Horrendous crime, terrible. But not everybody in the Epstein files met any girls, knew any girls, had participated in anything. They were just calling Jeffrey Epstein because Mo over here said, well, why don't you call him to see if you can get any money out of him? Why don't you see if he'll finance this venture? He seems to have a lot of money. The appearance of a lot of money gets you into a club. And he had the largest townhouse in Manhattan. Well, that gets you into a club. These were billionaires who did not own the largest townhouse in Manhattan. But Jeffrey Epstein did. Now, if you're a former president, if you're the CEO of a bank, if you're the chairman of a bank, and you're told Jeffrey Epstein, by the way, lives in the largest townhouse in Manhattan, he's in the club. He's one of us. You're not going to go checking and seeing if he has any clients. His qualification for getting a client that he would tell people, he'd say, I never take any client that has less than $1 billion in assets. That's what he'd tell. He'd say that, and then he'd have the largest townhouse in Manhattan. Everything looked okay, especially if you're out of town. You're not going to check. You wouldn't even know how to check. Well, all the clients I have, it's very confidential. That's what he'd say. And he looked good enough, and he sounded good enough, and he had the line of BS down pretty profoundly. But now people are saying that all of these people who went to Epstein Island were eating babies, were in the Red Shoe Club, which was a symbol for cannibalism, that they'd eat babies and then use the skin to make shoes. No, really, that's where we are. That is the McMartin preschool moment in time. That's where we are. Now we're at baby skin used for shoes. What? And it's going to keep exploding like that as millions more pages are released. Now, this Casey Wasserman guy, he's the president of the Olympic in the Summer Olympics in Los Angeles this year. He's the president, and he's also the CEO of his own talent agency, Wasserman Talent or something. And he's resigned from Wasserman Talent because, quote, his association with Epstein, just having a conversation with Jeffrey Epstein, he's guilty. Everybody who's in there who had any conversations with Jeffrey, any photos with Mr. Epstein, anything, they're guilty. They may have just had dinner, one voicemail. They're guilty. This woman who was chief counsel at Goldman Sachs, I think it was Goldman Sachs or Solomon Brothers. I apologize if I got it wrong. She resigned. She was a legal advisor on staff to this venture capital fund. It was either Goldman Sachs or Solomon Brothers. She had to resign this week. Why? She had a flirtatious voicemail email exchange with Jeffrey Epstein. There was no proof she had ever been there. She had no proof that there was sexo involved. None of that. She just talked to him. She had to resign this week. Hundreds of people are going to have to resign because they had a vague conversation with him at some point in time. That's crazy. And they say, well, when's anybody going to be arrested? He was arrested twice. He was in jail. The arresting was done. Ghislaine. And finally, we know how to pronounce her name, don't we, guys? We finally know how to pronounce Ghislaine. Do we know anybody else named Ghislaine? Do you think any babies this name are going to be named Ghislaine? Is this a common name among sex traffickers? Never heard the name before. Did you ever hear the name before? No. She's in jail. Now, one of my favorite rumors is that she was the boss, that he worked for her, that he wasn't smart enough to have a sex ring. He wasn't smart enough to want to run a hooker house, but she was. And she had the contacts, the relationships, and the birth of wealth. He wasn't born into wealth. He didn't graduate from college. All of that's wacky. But she couldn't have those relationships with the CEOs and all that they, whoever they were, needed or wanted. And I, by the way, think that there's a lot of myth that's wrong, which is that they're saying, well, Mossad put up the money. Israel put up the money. I thought Israel was our ally, right? Wasn't Israel our ally? Again, this is where it gets wacky. If you look at L. Brand, Larry Wexler, the chairman of L. Brand, which is Victoria's Secret, The Gap, The Limited, all of those clothing companies, what was his real business? He was a clothing manufacturer. That's why his prices were cheap. He was a clothing manufacturer. Oh, yeah, and Justice. Don't forget the teenage store, Justice. He was a clothing manufacturer. And what did he have to do? He had to get his clothes from the factory to the stores. Well, how do you do that? In trucks. Who drives the trucks? Union truck drivers. What's that about, right? Maybe that's who put up the money. Maybe it was those union fellows who put up the money and needed to extort these people. I don't know, but I know the two leaders were arrested. They were put in jail. To me, it would be largely over at this point, and we could move on. We don't seem to be moving on, do we? Hey, I have an email. My email is waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com. And I'm here tonight for T.J. McCormack. And the name of the show is Another Side of Midnight. And you're listening to the Red Apple Audio Network. Good evening. I've had fun. This is terrific. I hope that T.J., who gave me the privilege of spending time with you tonight, will let me spend time with you again when he comes to his senses and goes, you know what, I really need a weekend off. And anytime you need a weekend off, I really hope that you and I get in touch. And I think we've learned some very important things tonight, haven't we? We've learned that 500 people in an organization can keep a secret. That if they know where the UFOs are, and if they know where the aliens are living, that they can keep a secret. And I explained to you why. And I'm fascinated and mystified that there have been no massive lawsuits against public school systems for making boys swim naked without explanation. And then you learn sports. I mean, where else do you learn about sports? The origin of Ultimate Frisbee. I am one of the guys who originated Ultimate Frisbee, and that's why I would like to know why it isn't an Olympic sport, but double luge is. And we learned what double luge is, and we don't want to know. Now that we know, it's one of those things we can't unsee. Two guys in tight outfits, going on a sled 150 miles an hour. One guy's a top, the other one's a bottom. Walter M. Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network.
It's Another Side of Midnight, 77 WABC.